Mesopotamian Religion, Part 3, Temple, Part 2. Now, it was necessary not only to provide a deity with a temple as his house, but also to clothe and feed him. The ritual clothing of the images of deities was an important part of the cult at all times in ancient Mesopotamia. And we know in general that this applied as much to Assyria as to Babylonia. In Assyrian art, there are representations of processions showing the gods clothed, but we have no text giving us details of how and when the clothing was put on. We have actual lists of divine garments and jewelry for Babylonia, and there it seems that the ceremonial dress of the gods was something that was undertaken only for special processions or festivals, not every day. We know that in Assyrian temples, the deities were fed daily, for we find mention of providing food and of the morning and evening meal for the gods at Nineveh. Once again, information is fuller for Babylonia, from where we have texts giving details not only of the ceremonial involved in serving the gods their food, but even the menus. They were provided with two main and two lighter meals each day, with food, which included beer and milk, barley bread, umber bread, mutton, beef, ducks, other poultry, ostrich eggs, and duck eggs, as well as dates and figs. Oddly, despite the quantities the gods theoretically ate in the cult, no provision seems to have been made for them needing to excrete. This seems to have been a human function they managed without, since mythology is also silent about it. Although deities mythically participated in most other human activities, such as eating, drinking, making love, losing their tempers, sulking, weeping, and sleeping. Outside the daily care of the god's image, there were a large number of other ceremonies. Some of these took place monthly, some on particular days of the year, some others only on special occasions, such as the enthronement of a new king. But at any time, the temple might be called upon for special rituals to avert evil or an ill omen. Some of the ceremonies involved the image of the deity splendidly arrayed, leaving the temple to go in a procession and then return. In many cases, we know of ceremonies only from passing allusions, and details are scanty or wholly lacking. We may, for example, find a single line in a text which refers to when the king makes a sheep sacrifice before the stars. From this, we can deduce that something of sufficient national importance to involve the king was going on at night, possibly in the temple courtyard or on the temple or palace roof. But as to what it's all about, we absolutely know nothing. Some of the rituals were a great complexity, involving the images of large numbers of gods. Thus, we find one text which speaks of 15 deities standing to the left of the god of Asher, and 15 deities standing to his right. Clearly, this was some very magnificent ceremony. What the gods were doing in this particular ritual, we do not know, but it seems to have been some sort of divine conclave, for they were provided with a meal, holy vegetable on this occasion, comprising linseed, nuts, grapes, pomegranates, figs, bread, wine, and beer. Most of the temple rituals comprised various permutations upon such elements as processions of the gods, sacrifices of animals, feasting or offering of food and drink, recitation of incantation or prayers, singing lamentations, washing ceremonies, music on kettle drums, and, less predictably, dramatic representations of mythological events. The elements of the last kind might be including ritual fights, races, or going to bed with amorous intent, a ritual which modern scholars shyly refer to as the sacred marriage. Ceremony with music, particularly on kettle drums, were quite common for various gods, and a list enumerates 13 of these divine concerts at Asher between September and April. An ancient text, though not from Assyria, explicitly tells us that the purpose of the drums was to summons the gods. One feast of which we hear a great deal is called the Akuta, although it's often translated the New Year's feast. We do not really know what this term means originally. The translation is used because in Babylon, in the first millennium, this is what it had become, held in the opening days of the first month of the year, Nisan, which is approximately April. At Babylon, it included the ritual for the whole of a myth of creation, the representation of a ritual combat between the city god and the primeval monster Tiamat, both woman and dragon, a sacred marriage, ceremonies designated to ensure the well-being of the city for the coming year, and the enthronement anew of the earthly king, but it is not legitimate to assume that we have to see the Akuta festival in Assyria as reproducing that of Babylon in all details. In Assyria, the Akuta ceremony did not necessarily take place at the beginning of the year, in the month of Nisan, or April. We find references for such ceremonies, for example, in either Ab, August, Ulu, September, at a palace near Erbil, and in Adar, which is March, in an unidentified place. The occurrence of the festival at Adar is already evidenced in the early 2nd millennium. However, from the city of Asher, there's also evidence for an Akuta ceremony in Nisan, with strong indications that much of what happened paralleled the Akuta ritual in Babylon. This, however, may represent not age-old Assyrian custom, but the fairly recent influence of Babylon. On the 2nd of Nisan, the god Asher, after receiving a meat breakfast, left his temple in a chariot drawn by white horses, leading a procession of the gods to a building called the Akuta House. It was a temple built by Sennacherib outside the city. Sennacherib clearly regarded the open country as the only proper place for the Akuta House, since in rebuilding this temple, he chidingly refers to the fact that the custom had developed of holding the festival of the banquet of Asher, king of the gods, within the city instead of open territory. But this serves to prove that despite Sennacherib's strong views, there was an alternative Assyrian tradition about the matter, and Sennacherib's certainty about what was right may well have been influenced by Babylonian practices. What Asher did when he reached the Akuta House, we are not directly told. We can, however, infer that, in addition to presiding at the banquet mentioned by Sennacherib, he reenacted the primordial cosmic fight between the monster Tiamat. Our reason for thinking this is that Sennacherib describes the gates of the Akuta House as decorated with a representation of the image of Asher, who is going in the battle in the midst of Tiamat, as he raises his bow, riding in a chariot, girt with the deluge weapon. But here again, one wonders how far these details were ancient in Assyria, and how far they've been quite recently borrowed from the Babylonians. The Assyrian religion was basically a state religion, and the state depended on the king. It is therefore not surprising to find that it was on the king that many of the temple rituals centered. This remained true even of temples in cities far from the capital, where the king could not be present in person at the great festivals. In such cases, a ritual garment of the king would be sent to the temple to play the part that ideally the king would have played himself. Other members of the royal family, including women, could also be involved in temple rituals. Thus, we find mention of either the daughter or the sister of the king being required in one ceremony to summon by name the consort of the supreme Assyrian god Asher, as she was presented with an offering of cooked meat. So we have these temples. Who runs them? So our next show, we're going to be looking at temple personnel. Now, the sources for this, Ancient Semitic Civilization by Muscati, The Ancient Near East by Cyrus Gordon, The Might That Was Assyria by Sags, Mesopotamia, Assyrians, Sumerians, Babylonians, The Dictionary of Civilization, Mythology of Mesopotamia, and The Oxford History of the Biblical World by Coogan. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.